everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a special preview spotlight on Shadecraft. It's an Image comic that is coming out on March 31st. The final order cutoff is in a week on March 8th. So we want to let you know what it's all about and give you a chance to let your retailer know, hey, I want this comic. And maybe the most exciting part about it, this is the same exact creative team that brought us the amazing Skyward, Eisner-nominated, wonderful series. And through that series, we've established a great friendship with Joe Henderson, the creator. You may know him as the showrunner from Lucifer and a lot of the other great creative things he's done. He joined us for 12 Days of the Comic Source. So it's great to have him back. Joe Henderson, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Yeah, man. We were just chatting a little bit before we got started recording. You're excited. I'm excited. I'm sure it's been, you know, this is your sophomore effort of a series that you've created. I'm sure you can't wait to get it in front of fans of Skyward and just comic fans in general. So been a long time coming. Like, how long have you been working on Shadecraft?
I mean, I've been working on it ever since we finished Skyward. And honestly, part of the challenge was I was so happy with Skyward. I loved working on it. And to your point, the whole sophomore effort, it's like, how do I make sure that my next book, that our next book, Lee and I's, lives up to that? And so I put so much pressure on myself because I was like, I don't want the second book to feel like a letdown to me, to the fans, to anybody, to Lee. And so I spent way too much time on it. And then, by the way, I sent the script to Lee when I finally got it. Figured out what the heart of the story is, what the heart of Zadie Lou's journey is, which we'll talk about in a bit. But I finally sent the script to Lee, and then it took him forever to do the first issue. And then we talked about it, and finally he's like, I just feel this pressure. I feel this incredible pressure. I'm like, oh, Lee, we're in the same boat. Like, both of us we loved Skyward so much, and we wanted Shadecraft to have that exact same level of craft and passion and love. And hopefully people find that this lives up to that, because we really we wanted this thing to sing.
Yeah, and so we're going to start to get into some of the nitty gritty, everybody, and just so you understand what's going to happen here, we're going to talk about the issue in general, so you know whether you want to let your retailer know that you want to order it before its final order cutoff. There is going to be a section of the show where we get a little more spoilery that will be released at a later date, so I won't include that in the initial release. So if you're listening to this when it first comes out on March 1st, there won't be anything spoilery. If you're listening to the version that comes out later on April 2nd, there will be more detail. So just so we're all on the same page. And before we kind of dive into Shadecraft, we do want to remind everybody about how great Skyward was. So if anybody is listening for the first time, they're not familiar with Joe's previous work, do you want to just give us a quick recap of what Skyward was, and how it was received, and just how the whole Skyward experience, now that you've had a little perspective about it? I mean, because you know me, man, I love that series, and it's it feels like a complete story, but it also feels like something you could go back to in the future.
Thank you. Yeah, it's so Skyward was the first book that Lee and I did. It takes place, well, it's basically, what if tomorrow the world's gravity became a fraction of what it is? And so, yeah, guess what? Good news, you can fly through the air. Bad news is, if you jump too high, you don't come back down again. And so our story takes place 20 years after what is called G-Day, and it follows a young woman named Willa, who is basically a fearless woman who loves this world. It's the only world she's ever known, but she loves it because she can fly. And it's a story of her and her father. Her father is terrified of this world and is terrified of the deadly sky. And it's really a story about the two of them sort of meeting in the middle on both being fearless and having fear. But in particular, it's a story of Willa herself facing her fears and coming out stronger through the other side. So it's 15 issues. The hardcover collecting all 15 issues actually comes out, I believe, the week before Shadecraft. So
oh, nice.
We also tried to time it so that, hey, if you check out Shadecraft and you're like, oh, I wonder what else they've done, you've got this beautiful hardcover with a all-new 6-page story at the very end, an epilogue which was also fun because, like you said, like it's a story I do want to return to. And we took the opportunity to do a short story to sort of revisit it. And there was nothing better than being able to like get back into Willa's voice and play with the world and find new things to explore. And also just to get new pages in from Lee of that world. So that hardcover comes out in March. It is beautiful. It's just, honestly, it was great. Like we got, like you said, I had nominated for an Eisner, which was insane and amazing to me and just absolutely wonderful. And it was this book that I wasn't sure if anyone would really dig. Cause it's fun. Like it's not like this big, crazy, prestige book. It is a book that is fun and also scary and heartfelt and terrifying and funny, I hope. And so I just wasn't sure what the market for that kind of book would be, because those are the books that I personally love. But luckily, I also think to a certain extent, there aren't as many indie books that hit that spot. I think you were seeing more and more lately, like Kyle Higgins just launched Radiant Black, mm-hmm. which is very much of the same tone. His is obviously more superhero, but like he's playing in that spot as well that I feel like Marvel and DC sort of held control over, and indie books were more like, okay, we'll do prestige, we'll do R-rated. And I feel like every passing year you see more and more people going, well, why don't we, fun books can sell. And I know like Mark Waid used to always talk about how his books wouldn't sell because they were fun, and I feel like the industry's caught up to that a bit, and that fun books actually do sell and that people really gravitate towards them. And so that's been exciting.
Well, the other thing about it, and I'm hoping this is the case with Shadecraft, what was cool, and we already see it with Radiant Black, but the other thing that was cool about what you guys did with Skyward, it wasn't just that you created a book, but you created a community around that book. You really had a bunch of fans coming together and loving this same thing. And obviously you have, a following from your work in television with Lucifer and that sort of thing. So what I'm really hoping is we get a lot of people that love Skyward that come over and check out Shadecraft. And now we build a community around Shadecraft. So as I mentioned, the final order cutoff is in a week. It's March 8th. So you need to let your retailer know before March 8th, hey, I want this book. So you're guaranteed to have it. Because just like Skyward, it's likely the first issue is going to sell out, and you want to be sure you get one in your hand. So Joe, let's talk about Shadecraft. Why don't you let everybody know what is this story about?
So Shadecraft follows Zadie Lou, who is a typical 16-year-old, except for the fact that she is afraid of her own shadow. And as a 16-year-old, you should probably have grown out of that by now, except she might be right to be afraid. In fact, the shadows around her seem to be coming to life. They seem to want to kill her. And so this is a story of Zadie Lou facing the shadows both within and without. And it's just, it's a story that's very personal to me. I channeled a lot of my sort of 16-year-old angst and agita into her, for better or worse. Sorry, Zadie. And it's basically the tone of Skyward, which is sort of grounded fun mixed with horror, because that was the thing, is what we wanted to do is after Skyward, we wanted to do something a little different, something a little exciting, so that it's very much of our tone, but also something new. And horror felt like a really cool thing to play with. And so it's not a horror comic per se. I've been calling it forer, which is fun horror. Like it should be a little scary and a little intense and a little creepy, but also it should be mixed with a healthy dose of wish fulfillment and fun. It's a lot like those Amblin movies from the 80s and things like that. Like, you know, it's the Goonies and the Stranger Things things where it's, yes, it's scary, it's fun, but it's also exciting.
Yeah. So there's a level of suspense. There's a level of it being a little scary. And you know, certainly in Skyward, there was plenty of things that were, you know, scary in terms of, I fear this, I fear floating away into space, and Willa had fears, and we all carry around fears. Doesn't mean our lives are all horror stories. So it's bringing in the idea of being scared as this way to, you know, move the story forward, but also give the characters something to overcome, to challenge them so they can evolve, right?
Yeah. And it's funny because there is a clean through line between Skyward and Shadecraft when it comes to explorations of fear. I think it's just because it's something that I find very relevant. It's something that I've encountered a lot. I mean, it's something we're dealing with mass culturally in so many ways. And then just for me, like so much of my life and career has been the struggle of choosing strength over fear, choosing to make decisions that are bold, but and are scary, but are the right choices, because the fear-based decisions are the ones that feel safer, but usually the fear is pointing me in the wrong direction.
Right.
Whereas choosing out of strength means that, all right, I'm betting on myself. I'm betting on the future. I'm betting on positivity. So that's something that I really try to infuse into my work, or I just can't help but infuse into my work.
Right. Well, let's run down a list of the characters that we meet in, yes, in the first issue. So obviously Zadie Lou, you know, the main character, that she has that inherent fear of her own shadows. She's, you know, she's in high school. I think that's a great metaphor for fear. You know, in high school, you fear the future and that sort of thing. So what can you tell us about Zadie? And I also want you to touch on choosing to once again go with kind of a younger female protagonist.
Yeah. So Zadie is, like you said, it's high school. High school is that formative period. It's the transitionary period. It's where you're both fearless and also afraid of everything, because you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. And mix that in with high school, where you're afraid of making the wrong misstep, of doing the wrong thing. And so you've got this just wonderful cocktail for the metaphor that is shadows, and it is the sort of the unknown, or what could be hiding behind something. And then when it comes to Zadie herself, as a Chinese American woman, like, one of the things that I was really touched by with doing Skyward was how many people responded to Willa and how many people saw themselves in Willa. And listen, I'm a white dude. There are 1,000 characters on those shelves that look like me. Like, I grew up being like, oh, I could be Peter Parker or Steve Rogers or just about any of them. And so part of it to me is, I feel like it's my responsibility to create as many characters as possible that as many potential readers as possible can see themselves in, and hopefully also create a character that anyone can see themselves in. Like, to me, that's always the fun trick. Is, I think my hope is that anyone can pick this up and relate to Zadie Lou, but also if there is, you know, anyone who is, you know, like an Asian kid who wants to read a book that actually reflects her or his life, like, hey, here's a kid going through what I'm going through. I think that's important. I think it's a responsibility. It's something that has become very important to me after working in TV, where casting is so important, where we hear from so many people that are like, oh, because, like, when we cast a black god, when we got Dennis Haysbert to play God on Lucifer, that meant a lot to a lot of people. And I knew it would be important, but it was actually really touching to find out how much people were like, that's meaningful to me. Like, that's something that, like, that's a little piece of culture that just helps sort of normalize, not it always just being like a white dude in a beard and shit like that.
Yeah.
So that's just something that's always at the forefront of my head. And it's something that I always want to try to do. Cause also, if these things ever get adapted, that means you're casting a young Chinese American girl. And that's great too. Like, that's the thing. It's like building IP is the dirty word, but building books that, if they ever get adapted, you are going to create more opportunities for actors and actresses who aren't just white dudes. Is just that's really important to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, the other aspect of it is just, hey, can we just have books that look a little more realistic in terms of, when I go to the store, I don't just see white dudes. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you know, for years, it's supposedly Marvel's The World Outside Your Window, but is it really? Because I don't, you know, we don't see enough representation, you know, and I know that people worry that it's tokenism sometimes, but man, I just want to read good stories that do make me think and do reflect reality. I think that's important.
And honestly, like, one of the best examples, I remember when Kamala Khan got introduced way back when. I remember reading that first issue and being like, wow, this, like, what I thought they did so well is they introduced a character who felt so relatable and yet so different from anyone on the shelves, to the point where I was like, oh, it's a shame this is the only one. Mm-hmm. It's a shame that this isn't happening more often. But, like, it also just, it was so exciting to me. I was like, oh, this is a new Peter Parker story. This is the best new Peter Parker story I've experienced in I don't know how long. And it just, like, you look at those moments, those opportunities to reflect, to have the shelf reflect the world. And yeah, I think it's important and it's exciting. It's fun. It's, yeah. I honestly, I just also love Zadie Lou. She's like, she's like my little sister that I'm so protective of and love so much.
Yeah, she definitely, there's something about her. You managed to capture something with her in the first issue that you, she's very likable, you know, it comes across. We also meet a couple of her high school classmates, Josh, who she seems to have a little crush on. There's something going on there. And also Kate, who's kind of like her BFF. So we did see one of the things you did in Skyward really well was we had a great supporting cast. So should we expect to see more of Josh and Kate? Is there anything, I mean, we don't want to spoil, obviously, but is there anything you want listeners to know about those two?
Yeah, embracing the high school setting, the one thing I wanted to set up right away is those fun dynamics that you get to play with, which is you got the boy who has been her friend for a long time, who likes who, who's got a crush on who, who's going to stick their foot in the mouth at the wrong moment. Like, listen, I love me a good love triangle. I love me a good, oh, if I'd said the right thing at the right time.
Yeah.
One of the things I loved about Buffy was, yes, they're doing all of these, they're killing vampires, doing anything else, but also who loves who, you know, like so many shows, like that's what I love. That's what I love in comics. Like I love those struggles, and Zadie and Josh, a big part of their story going forward will be the, will they, won't they, especially with Zadie maybe looking a little crazy every passing day as she starts to realize a truth that is really hard to explain to other people. And Kate is very much just that friend. She's that friend that is like always next to you, always with you, but even she has a breaking point. And so it's always important to just get that sense of how isolated she is, especially if you're doing a story about shadows, where isolation is the most terrifying thing of all, because that's where the shadows come.
Another character that we're introducing, again, we don't want to spoil, but Zadie's brother, Ricky, who's been in this terrible accident. And so we may not necessarily see him in the way that we see a lot of other characters. Maybe he's not up and walking around, but it seems like he's going to be a big part of the story. And you're going to, you and the rest of the creative team, you're going to explore that relationship. We're going to kind of understand the relationship between Zadie and Ricky. Is that right?
Yeah, so the relationship between Zadie and Ricky is the centerpiece of the book. And a big part of it is figuring out what exactly that means, how that'll move forward. And after people read issue one, they'll very much understand what I mean by that. But I grew up as a middle kid in the shadow of two siblings who were just, I'll just be honest, cooler than me. And that was a big thing I wanted to explore, was that metaphor of living in the shadow of a sibling who is just better than you in every way. And that's Ricky. Ricky's the all-star. He's like, if you throw him into a sport, he'll be the best at it. If you throw him an essay, he'll write the best one. Like, he is the perfect, perfect kid, the perfect brother. And there is no one worse than to have to be related to than that. And so the way I sort of think about it is he is the bright shining star, and Zadie has no choice but to live in his shadow. But also at the same time, something happens with Ricky that we'll realize has really thrown all the dynamics out of whack. And so that becomes a big part of the story.
And then obviously they're, Zadie and Ricky's parents, you know, Ricky having gone through this, you know, this terrible accident, and the, you know, the trauma that brings to the whole family. And especially to lose somebody, like you said, that was this bright star. I mean, that's just so traumatic. So are they going to be a big part of the story as well? Are they going to be a little more in the background? How are they going to fit in?
They'll be a big part of it, in as much as this is a family story more than anything else. Almost everything I write is a family story. And so much of Zadie and Ricky's issues are actually the issues of the family itself. What it's like to have an older brother who's so amazing. What it's like for your parents to maybe choose one, prefer one over the other. I've got two kids, and you know, there's always just a sense of I love you both equally, but there are days where I definitely love one more than the other. And I know a lot of people who've grown up very much feeling like they were always loved more than another. And I mean, I was that kid trying to get my mom's attention, but my cooler brother was also out drinking and doing stuff. And so he got all of the attention. So, you know, I was always like just trying to get noticed. And so a huge part of it is really exploring just that idea for Zadie, what they represent, how she wants to be the child that they want to see how can she shine her own light past Ricky towards her parents.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about that family dynamic in terms of, you know, we've already talked about Zadie being of Chinese descent and you know how that might play in with, you know, culture and things like that. But before we get to that specifically, you know, you mentioned wanting to kind of put something on the shelf that's more representative, not enough, you know, great female protagonists. But we go even beyond that, and unfortunately, it's gender still a thing, right? And so we're talking about somebody who's, you know, supposedly seeing shadows come to life and that sort of thing. And I can't help but think one of the things that didn't stick me, I didn't notice it until I think the second or third time I read it. And it goes, and this is a legitimate thing when you start talking about women, females that go to a doctor and they say, hey, I have this happening or that happening. They are so much less likely to be believed than a male. That is still a thing. And that just drives me crazy. So is that something you're going to explore it all the way, you know, oh, she's a girl. They're more likely to be afraid of things like, and did that play in at all to you choosing to go with a female protagonist?
It's fascinating because I've been talking about this with some friends because I always try to get peer reads. I always try to get other input. And there's two things. One is exactly that. It's like women are just less believed. And two, there's also this very simple idea with shadows, which is if it's midnight and I'm out on a walk and I see a crazy shadow, I'm like, well, that's probably a crazy shadow. If a woman's out walking at night by herself, she's probably got her keys in her hand and has turned them into like a Wolverine claw because we operate at a different set of rules. And one of the things that I think is interesting about this is, you know, when women jump at shadows, so to speak, it's justified because they have to deal with a lot more shit than we have to deal with. And so that feeds into it as well, this sort of sense that like, that there is a different set of rules for men and women. And as much as we're trying to create that equality, it's just the simple fact of the matter is it's harder for them. And telling a story like this as subtext, I found it incredibly rich, and I found people really respond to that because they're like, yeah, it's harder for us and it's scarier for us. And people are like, oh, well, you know, grow up. And it's like, no, this is how we survive.
So it sounds like as you started creating this, that choosing to go with a female protagonist and shadows, it's almost like lightning in a bottle. You weren't even necessarily aware of some of the subtext. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it was. I always wanted to tell a story with a female protagonist dealing with shadows. And then as I dug into it, I was like, oh, this is... It's so funny. You make a decision and then you start embracing it and you start realizing that like, oh yes, yes, even more yet. Like you sort of start to roll downhill. And it was something that like, I really liked writing Willa. I think there should be more female protagonists on the shelf, especially diverse female protagonists. So like that was all like sort of slotted in for me. But as I kept adding to it, I kept realizing, oh, I can lean into this. I can speak to this. I can embrace this. And yeah, so it's, so much of writing is lucky coincidences, but also then leaning towards those lucky coincidences.
Yeah, as it starts to make more sense to you, like, oh, yes, this is exactly why it should be this way.
Yeah.
Well, we mentioned this earlier. I want to kind of dig into a little more. Shadows as a metaphor for an uncertain future, and certainly at the age that Zadie is, you know, start thinking about, what am I going to do with my life? What do I want to do as a career? Where am I going to go to college? Am I going to move away? Am I going to still live at home? All that sort of thing. Do you think that is something that is universal, like everybody, even if you're not going to college? I mean, because I do. I think that at that age, there's just your body's undergoing changes. You're starting to have emotions and is this really love? Is it not? And crushes. And I mean, it is just such a volatile time. The unknown is huge. It can be overwhelming. Just like shadows in the dark. What can you not see?
It is one of the most fearful times of your life. It's the time where you don't know what on earth is going to happen to you. Every decision is, oh, is this going to be my life? Is this going to, like, I still remember like the first girl I loved, I was like, and we broke up. I'm like, this is it. This is the end. The world is ending. Like you feel that and you're, everyone can tell you you're being absurd. There's plenty of other people you'll meet. But the truth is, in that moment, you feel like every decision will change your life. And the irony is, sometimes it's very, very true. But it is, it's all fear, right? It's all like, I'm afraid of the future. I'm excited about the future, but also there's so much pressure on it that I'm afraid of it. I am terrified of it, of this unknown, of what it could possibly be. And so, yeah, that's a huge part of what I'm playing with.
Well, it's interesting that you say, and obviously it happens with perspective. You know, you get to be our age and you look back and you realize, yeah, some of those decisions you made as a kid in high school, they really did affect you for the rest of your life. And you probably weren't really aware or probably really informed or knowledgeable enough or wise enough to make the right choice. But that's just life. And everybody's kind of in the same boat. But kind of what I'm getting at here is there are things that we should be afraid of, right? And, you know, when you apply that to this story, are there things in the shadows that you know, Zadie's not crazy. These are things she should be afraid of, right?
Yeah, that is the biggest part of the metaphor to your point, which is, sometimes the shadows are scary. Sometimes there is something in them. Sometimes when you're walking down the street and you hear something behind you, you should be a little more wary. Sometimes when you see a movement, that movement means something. And so, and you know, like we all relate with a level of paranoia and fear. And what if the shadows are real? What if what lurks in the darkness is something to be afraid of? And like you said, like half the time, sometimes it's true. Sometimes you're like, oh, the world's going to end if I don't do this. But you know what? There are consequences. There are sometimes huge consequences. And so whenever you can take the metaphor and make it real life, that's when I feel like you're cooking with gas. And that's what's been so fun with the shadows, is finding all those different ways to have them reflect the insecurities of the future and the insecurities of a moment.
Now, when we start talking about these shadows, you know, we mentioned Zadie and her family being of Chinese descent. Is there going to be any ties to Asian culture? I mean, I'm completely unfamiliar of if there's any kind of a culture or mythology around shadows and any Eastern culture. So is that something you research? Is it going to be part of the story at all?
There's some. I made a conscious choice not to tie it in to that. What I wanted this to be is a story of a girl dealing with shadow monsters who happens to be Chinese American. And so, because to me, it was like, I wanted that sort of the Peter Parker-esque thing. It's like someone got bit by a spider. Spiders aren't this particular, you know, radioactive spider isn't specific to any culture or world. Right. It just happened to be a white kid. And so, like, to me, as also a white guy writing this, I didn't want to go too specifically into a culture. Having said that, I also have a lot of friends, Chinese American friends, who I've had read this and make sure that I'm not unintentionally stepping into anything or screwing up or speaking to issues that are unique to that culture or to growing up. I mean, I started working on this last year when Trump was doing the whole Wuhan flu bullshit and all of that. And I had a lot of friends get very scared about where they were in the world. And to me, it was like all the more reason to just normalize a book that happens to have a lead character who is Asian American, who, you know, just is a normal kid. Like, because that as much as we can just normalize all of that, it's very, very important to me. And then, but yeah, so to me it's more just, this is a girl, this is happening to her. Why, what's going on, and delving into that.
Great. Yeah. And I applaud you for doing that. I mean, I think it's so important. And I know a lot of people, you know, there's that whole saying, it's easier to ask forgiveness than to ask for permission, but I don't always subscribe to that. I mean, if you can prevent yourself from making a mistake or inadvertently offending somebody, why would you not want to do that? You know, why not take advantage?
And again, it's fear versus strength. You're afraid. You're afraid of someone telling you you shouldn't do something. And so I was like, I need to get this in front of people. I need to both believe in it, but also be willing to change things so that I can learn. Like on Skyward, I had a couple people reach out to me on Twitter about the idea of a white man punching a black woman in the face. It's an issue 3 of Skyward. And it's something that I'd never really thought about, because the way I was approaching it very simply, which is, she's a regular hero who happens to be a black woman. And they were like, sure, but what you're not acknowledging is that there's a lot of pain in that visual. And right. I only had a couple people mention it, but it was enough that I was like, I should have gotten more eyes on this. Mm-hmm. Because there was a different way to execute that could have still hit it. That also wouldn't have triggered some people in a way that was a little painful to them. And I understand that. And that was really, I didn't have a ton of people read Skyward for that, with that in mind. And so with this, that was one of the lessons I really tried to take away, which is I want to make sure that I'm respecting things that I don't know. And surrounding myself with people who can protect me and also protect the readers and make sure that the reading experience is as positive as possible.
Yeah, well, and you want to have the best product possible.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well,
the best it's entirely selfish.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about getting the creative team back together. We know Lee Garbett is doing the art, so that's great.
Yeah.
But you've also got Antonio Fabella back on colors and Simon Bolin back on letters. So was it just a matter of when this was ready? You just called everybody up and said, hey, you guys want to do it again? And everybody was ready to jump back on board?
Yeah, when we wrapped up Skyward, it was really nice because Simon and Antonio were both like, when's the next book? And I was like, great. All right. Tell you what, next book, you'll be our first calls. And if you guys are available, it's the easiest thing ever. And it's nice. You've got a team that knows what they're doing. I mean, letterers are the unsung heroes of comics. Like, Simon knows how to create a rhythm, to create a pacing. He's just wonderful at what he does. And Antonio, I think, as you'll see in the first issue, we really pushed him to do something a little different. And because Antonio's amazing, especially if you look at his Skyward work, it's so bright and vibrant. Mm-hmm. But we really pushed him to like play with the shadows in a way he hadn't before. In the same way that I pushed Lee artistically to do all this crazy stuff, in the same way that Lee pushes me every issue to try to come up with something even better to match his pages. Like, to me, that's the collaboration. Everyone's sort of challenging each other. But I think Antonio's work in particular is just, I think, something that no one's really seen from him yet, but I think they'll see more and more because it's just, I think it's almost painterly. It's very, very beautiful stuff.
Yeah. I was going to mention Antonio's work because when you start talking about shadow and the way the shadows are depicted in the first issue, like you mentioned, that's so much more dependent on the color work, you know. Lee's line work is great, but when we start talking about a very important aspect of the story, Antonio's doing more heavy lifting than he was, you know, and he did a great job on Skyward. I mean, like you said, it's so bright and the world comes to life. But you're asking more of Antonio and he's rising to the challenge.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. And that's the fun of it. The fun of it is finding the collaborators who want to be pushed, who want to go, hey, I've already done this. Let me show you what else I can do. Let me show the audience or future companies who might want to hire me what I am capable of.
And for fans of Skyward, you know, that community that you built that loved it, if they were to come to you and say, okay, why should I pick up Shadecraft? Like, what similarities am I going to see? What are some of the things I loved about Skyward that you think that also are here in Shadecraft?
That's a great question. I mean, what I would tell them is this is a spiritual sequel, if you will. It's the same sense of a hero going against impossible odds and also trying to figure out her own place in the world. Zadie is, I think, is a character very similar to Willa, but also very different. I think Willa started off with this brimming confidence, whereas Zadie is starting much more a level of insecurity. But they both have that will deep inside to persevere and fight. And also they also have I like to think, a pretty nice sense of humor in the face of terrible odds. But very much I wanted Zadie to resonate with anyone who loved Skyward and loved Willa in particular, and the story to be of a very similar tone with just a little extra horror laced through it.
So other than adding in some scary elements, a little bit of that horror feel, is there any other way that you're trying to challenge yourself differently with this series to make sure? Because I know you love to constantly make sure you're improving and challenge yourself as a writer, continuing to evolve. Is there anything you can point to in this title where you're like, yes, this is specifically where I think I can grow and evolve as a creative?
That's great. Well, one of them is... one of the criticisms of Skyward early on was that it was a little decompressed. I liked that because it's a big world. It's vast vistas. But even as I was writing it, I was slowly adapting and trying to sort of put more in there. You know, it's a lot of it's bang for buck. You know, comics are expensive. How do you make sure you earn it? One of the ways I always did it is made sure that my issues were always longer than 22 pages. Sometimes they were 28, sometimes they were 25. Until towards the end, like, I was really trying to just get as much in as possible. In Shadecraft, I've tried to really take that to heart, what's also nice is shadows are claustrophobic. Shadows are scary. By condensing things, you actually can end up getting more. But what I really wanted to make sure is that, okay, I do read the comments. I'm that guy who reads the comments, but I'm also the guy going, you know what? Fair point. That's insane. Well, that's actually a good point. And so I'll take it. And if someone says like, hey, you know, the decompression, I get done with the book in 2 minutes. I'm like, okay, that's fair. I mean, hopefully you're taking a little bit more time looking at the gorgeous art, but I'm going to try to split the difference and make sure that there's a little bit more meat on that bone. And so that's something that I really try to do with Shadecraft without slowing down the read. Because the challenge is you also want to leave room for Lee's beautiful art. You want to leave room for the storytelling. You don't want to put too much in there that's just in there to feel like more. You got to earn it. And so a lot of it was me just digging in and going, okay, how do I find even more story? How do I enrich the reading experience even more?
Do you feel like having examined it, is one story more, either Skyward or Shadecraft, is one inherently more dense? Is there more story to tell in one particular word, or do you think they're pretty much about the same?
You know, it's funny because, that's great. I don't know. I think Shadecraft, the first issue, I was going to say is more dense, but dear Lord, we get a lot done in the first issue of Skyward. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it too is it's executing different concepts, right? Like in Skyward, you have to sell the idea of the world turning upside down. And so much of that is seeing it. So much of that is the visual. Whereas the Shadecraft, what you're trying to convey really quickly is a whole lot of Zadie in particular. Like Willa is the heroine of Skyward, but she's almost in a world and in the beginning reacting to it. And then her story really starts to take off. Shadecraft, the story is Zadie. And so I think that's the difference between the two, but I actually have no idea if I even answered that question. So
No, I think you answered it 100%. And as you're saying that, what I'm realizing is in a way that the story in Shadecraft, the way the story starts in Shadecraft is more intimate. Whereas in Skyward, just like you said, it starts with this big open world, and then we kind of eventually zero in on who Willa is and her relationships, and it becomes more intimate. Whereas this one starts out, you know, kind of focused on Zadie, and it's intimate. It has that feel right from the start. So yeah.
I mean, perfect example. Skyward starts with Willa's dad. Shadecraft starts with Zadie. And a big part of it is, though, what we're doing is what are the main relationships? And the main relationship in Skyward, at least in the beginning, is Willa and her dad. And so it's okay to start with him, get to her, and then make it her story because we're getting to know her as we go. With Shadecraft, it's Zadie and Ricky. We're meeting our main character, and then later on, we're introducing the sibling. But the truth of it is, he's there the whole time in his own way because the shadow of him is always cast over Zadie. Yeah, I had a lot of shadow metaphors. I'm going to like do it all the time. It's terrible.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. It's perfect. So reminder, everybody, final order cutoff is in 1 week. So be sure you let your retailers know.
Please.
Yeah. Check it out. It's amazing. So that's going to do it for the portion that's the kind of the preview. And so we'll come back in a little bit and let you know where you can follow Joe online and do all that kind of stuff. Well, I can't wait to read more of Shadecraft. In Joe and your fellow creatives, I trust after the incredible ride you took us on Skyward. So
thank you.
I look forward to more of this. Best of luck with the series. Hope it goes far beyond 5 issues. And just a reminder, all you listeners, final order cutoff is 1 week from when this recording will drop. So Monday, March 8th, let your retailer know. And then the first issue comes out on the 31st of March, and this spotlight will come out a few days later, and hopefully you've had a chance to read it already. And don't forget, as Joe mentioned, the beautiful hardcover of Skyward has come out in March as well. With I'm getting it. I gotta have that new, you know, epilogue 6-page story.
It's beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, and having a nice hardcover to go on your shelf, you know, that's so great. It's one of the best things, you know. And if this pandemic ever ends, and you have people come back into your house, they look at, you know, they see something on your bookshelf, and that's how you can spread the love of story. Oh,
so. I cannot wait to have that hardcover. Like, I've seen the early stuff, and it is beautiful. I want it on my shelf so bad.
Awesome. As I said, can't wait to read Shadecraft, Joe. And, you know, we're going to have you back on when it's all said and done to promote the trade, and we can dig into everything that's happened in the first 5 issues.
That would be awesome. Thank you, man.
So why don't you remind everybody where they can find you online, interact, have questions about Skyward or Shadecraft or any of that stuff. Where's the best place?
I'm on Twitter at Henderson underline Joe. That's the best place to find me. I love, if you ask me questions about Shadecraft, you're going to get an answer. Like, I love talking about it. I love anyone engaging. I will be annoying in the over interacting way. So find me there. Anything you want to know, I'll chat. I'm in.
Awesome. And I'll put a link to Joe's Twitter in the show notes, everybody, so you can go and follow him there if you're having trouble finding him. So again, Joe, hey man, great to catch up. Always good to see you.
You too. Thank you.
And to you listeners, we want to thank you for listening as always. Be sure you go and let your retailer know if you're listening to this on March 1st that you want Shadecraft, order yourself a copy. And if you're listening to it on Friday, if you didn't pick it up, I'm sure your store still has a copy. Make sure you go and get one. So thanks for listening as always, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.